But I'm excited because they went from all whites to these black and white beauties.
They actually look really good. It's very difficult for me to tell that any of it is a paint job and not part of the, like,
actually
that
it's
not made that way. Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually kind of hard to tell IRL as well.
That's good. Yeah, the camera does lend some, like, ambiguity, but it looks real clean. Did you use a stencil for it?
Yeah.
So you made the stencils and then sprayed on?
No, actually hand-painted.
Oh.
Using Angela's leather paints. And then I'm going to do, like, a Kingdom Hearts. You know, like, Louis Vuitton?
Yeah.
Has, like, their L's and V's and, like, the, like, it's, things
it's
for luggage.
It's a symbol thing, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's a Kingdom Hearts luggage type thing that I'm going to put
is?
On the toe box. Yeah. For those listening to this raw audio, I just showed my shoes that you can find on Cookie Skimilk's art page on Facebook. You can find pictures of the Kingdom Hearts shoes that I am making.
It is March 3rd, 2019. You're listening to Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And this is a podcast mostly about video games, amongst many other topics we may cover whenever we feel a need to. Guys, what have you been up to this week? I also don't want you guys to say anything sword and shield related, just a heads up.
Okay. Well, I started rewatching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but...
did you really?
No. No, I just wanted to make you feel bad.
Because
I know it's sword and shield related.
And I forged a claymore, so we're each running out of topics here.
Oh, and crap, this is the week I made that kite shield, too.
this week I have been, as discussed before the intro played, or I'm not sure how Neil's going to edit this out. Or do whatever he's going to do. Magic of editing.
Which means I'm not going to touch this part now.
Yeah, yep. Anytime you call for editing, that gets automatically flagged as content that needs to remain unaltered.
Pretty much.
Which is why my career as a freelance YouTube editor failed, because I would never do what people told me to.
God damn it, Neil. I said, put this in here. I've been working on... I finally got happy with the shoes I started painting. I'm not sure if I mentioned these on the podcast at all.
Mm-hmm.
My Incredible Hulk shoes. I got finished with those and felt experienced enough with the Angela's leather paints to actually attempt the shoes that I bought just to be painted. So I've got some all white. Oh, God. Energy light shoes. So, you know, the shoes that you see the people shuffling in on those ads back in the day with the lights around the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They were like $20. So I got some all white shoes and I decided on a Kingdom Hearts theme in regards to how much Kingdom Hearts 3 I've been playing, which I actually played this week. So, yay.
Did you spend more time on the shoes than on Kingdom Hearts 3?
About equal time, actually. Kingdom Hearts 3 is a very good game for 2 seconds of gameplay and 30 minutes of video to watch. So, you know, just in between videos. Try swiping left. Okay, there you go. Neil was out of focus. But no, about even. So I've been working on that and I ended up recalibrating my old 3D printer. So now I'm also 3D printing little props for D&D. So I got a bunch of stalagmites printed. Because unfortunately, Neil would never do stalactites in video editing software for us.
How the hell would you do stalactites in a graphical form? Or a graphical, not graphical, sorry, but in a physical decal form? Like, you would have to create some sort of support to hold, stalactite up.
A nice rigging system, yeah. So unfortunately, stalactites are out, but I ended up 3D printing some stalagmites with my old 3D printer. And
do you really have to differentiate between the two when a stalagmite could become a stalactite by just reversing its orientation?
Yeah, you just invert it and glue it to something above it, right?
Pretty much. Ooh, that's an idea.
Or if I you just make it like balance where it at least has like three contact points on the tips of the stalagmites or tights, then you can just put it down and it can rest on those tips.
Which I learned in my physics class that a three-point support system is the strongest.
Is good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just heard is good.
Is it the strongest or is it... Why is that stronger than four?
Well, so four has some imperfections, we'll say.
Mm-hmm. There is are like that... points of weakness that three... like equilateral points don't have with like weight distribution and whatnot.
And that's why tripods are so much more, you know, widely used as opposed to, you know, quad pods.
Well, I would imagine just the quad pod would be difficult and obnoxious to set up.
Plus it's a manufacturing cost.
It's also difficult to say. So
just set that quad pod up over there. That what?
Quad pod.
It actually sounds really good to say. It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, quad but pod. How often are you going to like very quickly try and say the word and end up saying quad pod?
I don't know how often. Where am I for
or
this?
Better I may yet, do it you by say default. Cod pod, which is a completely different product.
I don't know what that is either.
It's what you it's what you either. Hold your cod piece in.
It's a fish container.
Really?
Oh no! Yeah, you're thinking
wait. Is that real? No, Neil's laugh is saying he's fucking with me. I just call it a QP at that point. But either way, yeah, I've been 3D printing some stuff. Doing a lot of art this week, / without the video game thing. We finished watching Sex Education.
You liked it.
Yeah, it was really good. We need to get back into that Wonderland show.
Promised Neverland.
Yeah, Promised Neverland. We need to get back into that.
I'm behind by an episode right now as well.
We're behind by several episodes. We actually got Lizzie to watch Shield Hero, so she's actually caught up on that. She's really enjoying it.
So she does not feel that it is a travesty towards a free and equal society between man and women? Man and woman?
Well, actually, Shield Hero is a matriarchy.
Right, but the whole thing about rape, isn't that what everyone was up in arms with?
That is what that's what all the Americans were up in arms about, but, you know, it was only one episode and really just set the mood of what the world was going to be like for this main character. So she didn't care. She was like, eh. It was a false accusation of rape rather than a lady being actually raped by goblins.
Yeah, I take it she doesn't like Goblin Slayer then.
Well, she walked in when I was watching the first episode of Goblin Slayer right at like...
No, Mom, like I swear, 30, it's not what it looks like.
Like 20 seconds before the goblin started raping the chick, she walked in right as the one girl got stabbed in the stomach and you could see the pain in her face. And Lizzie was like, what the fuck are you watching? I was like, I don't know. I saw the content warning at the beginning, but you know... They have content warnings all over the place in America. It's just like, oh, explicit content. Oh, there was a woman's left nipple because she was breastfeeding. That's explicit content in America. Explicit content in Japan is, yeah, some shit's about to go down.
But having read like a decent portion of Goblin Slayer, the manga, that is, I kind of find that they might have pulled a Game of Thrones on everyone.
Where they start really extreme to hook, and then they mellow immediately afterward.
It mellows out immediately afterwards.
And it's super shonen-y. Like, it's extremely shonen-y in the regard of, like, Kirito is a dude in this, except he's more of an edgelord.
Yeah.
I digress. I don't want to talk about this if you guys don't want to talk about it. So,
agreed.
That's my disclaimer.
I'll say, actually... Watching YouTube videos about Goblin Slayer makes me want to actually read the manga because I just love the fact that no one actually has names. Everyone's titles.
And there's a lot of cool things about it too, in regards that like a bad story can have cool aspects of it, which would include things like weapons apparently becoming dull upon the use against goblin blood. So like that's why the protagonist constantly shifts out weapons and only buys really cheap equipment.
Makes sense. But weapons become dull on any blood. That's why you got to take care of your weapon.
Yes, yes. But the concept is that like in a world where everyone else, you know, prizes the use of one blade, one or two blades.
Yeah, magic items.
Yeah, in his situation, like if he were to do that, the idea is that by the second or third goblin, his blade's now basically useless. So he constantly is discarding the weapons he uses. And again, I don't want this to be like a testament to me and like actually appreciating the show. It's just I think ideas like that are necessary to have successful world building.
Yeah. Mm.
Have you ever watched Berserk?
Berserk CGI didn't do it for me.
No,
I was
going to
say,
yeah.
Watching it is really hard.
I got through the first two episodes and was just like, I can't even anymore. I'm done with this.
It's just that like a lot of people called Goblin Slayer the second coming of Berserk. And I think
they're distinct enough.
Like theme wise or like art style wise?
No, so you can't really judge Berserk on the CG series that happened, what, like a year or two ago? Because I think that, I don't want to say it was bad, but it definitely felt like
it wasn't good, medium. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like they were working with a form of art, meaning CG, that just wasn't necessarily there yet. Yeah, like it's hard to get three-dimensional art into an anime when inherently, like the anime style that it's known for especially, is not perfectly three-dimensional to begin with. Like a character will look one way when looking in profile and look differently when looking head-on into the quote-unquote camera or panel. But that's neither here nor there.
You would say that, but at the time that Berserk came out, there was another anime I was actually watching.
Sorry.
But it was also heavily CGI. It was like these dudes had like shadows that they were able to summon that people couldn't see, and they like met. Oh my god!
Wait, I can't tell if you're trolling and bringing up Persona or JoJo.
No, it's not Persona, but it was very Persona-esque.
While you're looking at that up, let me write my defense for Berserk, though. Essentially, I think why people compared Berserk to Goblin Slayer was because the initial
shock value
of Goblin Slayer, yeah, is similar to what you would experience in Berserk, except in Berserk, the author tends to build up the characters and stuff with substantial backstory and time to develop said characters before ripping them from your hands as a reader.
It's a very slow, grim burn with Berserk, while Goblin Slayer, I think, got that just from the episode one being shocking and gory as well, and therefore it was immediately compared without necessarily like appreciating the difference in the amount of like build and tension and relationships that are developed.
Yep, that's
Berserk.
That is exactly it. There are also some other parallels too, especially with the main character being, we'll say, a little troubled or scarred from past experiences.
Yeah.
And definitely a degree of similarities just based on the amount of gore in the middle of combat between the two. But you might like it though. I don't know. I think it's got like a really interesting story, and like a lot of bad things happen in the story, and like I think you are really, but the story at the same time is not so simple that you should feel at any point in time that someone is bad and someone is good. Like it's more three-dimensional than that.
So my question is, does the animation get any better?
I did not watch the CG series, but there is an older an older series that came out, I think, probably more than 5 or 6 years ago that covers a specific arc in
the
manga
that
I think is perfectly
fine. Yeah, that's what it is, right? It's called the Golden Age series?
Yeah, I think that's it.
There's like 3 OVAs for it, and those introduce you to it. And I think they're relatively good.
So.
Okay. I can give those a try. Like, I was interested in the idea of Berserk, but I was not... the reason that Berserk Claymore did the same thing, and I couldn't watch Claymore because of that bad CGI. Oh my god, what was this anime fucking called? It was something on Netflix where
it was that one with the space cancer, right?
Not space cancer, like
Knights of Cydonia was the one I was thinking of. Had really bad CGI.
Oh god, Knights of Cydonia did have really bad wait, was it Knights of Cydonia? No, it wasn't Knights of Cydonia. This one was oh god, that was Space Cancer.
Yeah.
This one was like a kid dies. So basically it was these humans that were immortal and they could control these
Aijin, right? Is it Aijin?
Yeah, Aijin.
Yeah, I read a little bit of that. I thought it was for some reason, I thought the name was Akira a couple recordings ago, but I double-checked, and it's actually Aijin.
So it had... Oh, God. How do you spell Aijin?
A-J-I-N? Could be also Ajin make sure. Or something else.
Yep. Aijin, demi-human. So basically, it had... It was... Basically, I found it at the same time that I was trying to watch Berserk and Claymore. And it was also bad CGI, but it was like the best animated bad CGI over Berserk. I forget why I was trying to make that thing. There's a live action version of this. Oh, that's going to be awful. I've got to watch it. Why, Chris? Hey guys, can you help me like get over my weird obsession with watching live action animes?
Yeah, I just need a car battery and some jumper cables.
Sometimes they're good.
When?
So Detroit Metal City.
Hmm.
But that was like way back in the day, and was that any good?
Yeah, and I thought it was.
Was
fun.
That based on? Was there an anime?
Yes,
of that.
There is a manga anime, or at least a manga off of it. And we talked about it before, but it's basically the kid that wants to be a folk, like, acoustic guitar, soft-spoken singer, and then ends up in a metal band. Also, Ping Pong? What the hell is wrong with me? The Ping Pong movie, which I'll look up the exact name of it. Ping Pong, 2002 film. This was based off of a manga. It is... a Japanese film, and I think this is maybe my favorite sports film of all time because it's anime still. But I mean, it's live action. When I say it's anime, I mean that like the plot and story, like the plot is told in a way that feels very anime, if that makes sense, but not like over the top. This is my super backspin attack. It's still straight up ping pong, nothing special about it.
I don't know, man. Some of these shots that I'm seeing in this trailer is pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, ping pong, like high-level ping pong is crazy. So
high-level ping pong is crazy.
I don't want to take away from that aspect of it. It's just not Prince of Tennis amounts of insanity.
I don't know. This guy just did like this super high jumping thing, and for whatever reason, in the reflection of the guy's glasses, he was wearing like a helmet, and he got called the hero. So
you just have to watch for the context of that.
So yeah, this is looking pretty anime as fuck. I can't wait to watch this as well.
It's good. It's very good.
So were there any like? Oh no, I guess this is newer. God, I want to watch this.
The 2002 film.
Yeah, you can find this on Netflix.
Oh, that's cool. That might be worth a rewatch for me, too.
It's unfortunately in part one and part two, so, you know.
Wait, what? Part one and part two?
Yeah, so Japanese Ping Pong 2002 with English sub part two 2. And then, oh God, can I find part?
I've never known a film to be split up in that nature on Netflix. Not that it really matters, but.
Hey, man. Part 1 is an hour. I mean, part 2 of 2 is an hour. Oh, okay, I can't find part 1, though.
At this point, being such an old movie, it's crazy saying that when it was only 2002 and it's 2019. You might be able to find it on other means.
Things.
Through other means, I guess.
Either way, that's what I've been doing.
Well, Scott, what have you been up to?
I've been on the hunt for a new vehicle since my last one was all smashed up to bits. I think this is the first time talking about it on the podcast since we recorded early last week. And I encountered my incident, I think, later that evening.
So you didn't get to go snowboarding, did you?
I did go snowboarding. I'm insane.
Did not let that slow you down.
I just love snowboarding. I was very tired, though. Very sleepy. The quick recap for non-podcast hosts who are in on the loop. I was driving to a nearby town when I encountered a 5-car pileup and became car number 4 and ultimate kinetic energy sink for the pileup in my late Honda Civic. And anyway, my car got smashed to bits. Everybody in the accident was fine, uninjured, but my car was reduced to scrap metal. And so I've been getting by without a vehicle for about a week now. So I spent the majority of my week like managing just payouts for my vehicle, finding deals on new vehicles, and kind of trying to get around in whatever ways I could. So I haven't had a very active week in the world of gaming and media and entertainment. But I can say I finally did get a new vehicle, which is nice.
Subaru 2019?
I did not get a Subaru. No.
Well,
I checked him out.
Now.
Okay.
Just going to leave the call.
Good. I finally got him out of the podcast, guys. I didn't realize that it was buying the wrong car, but it worked.
So what'd you get?
I got a 2019 Nissan Rogue. I got a pretty sweet deal on it, and it is the classiest car I have ever personally driven slash owned. Got heated seats, got a really nice like camera system on it.
So you can live stream while you drive now, right?
All-wheel drive. Yeah, the cameras actually are only on the outside of the vehicle. Oh. So if they ever catch me, that's really bad news. If I'm ever on camera in that thing, something very wrong has happened.
You just clip through the car?
Yeah, but I'm finally mobile, which is nice. Sort of. I actually have to finish doing all of the like lease paperwork and get the payout for my other vehicle to pay off my lien. So I'm juggling a bunch of things. So I have this nice new car sitting in my parking lot that I can't really mess around with until it's insured. So
what color?
It's like this sort of cool tone gunmetal. So it's bluish.
Okay.
Bluish, dark gray. Like a sleek carbon.
Heated steering wheel?
No, but leather steering wheel.
You ain't shit.
That's right. You've got the fanciest car out of the three of us.
No, mine also doesn't have a heating steering wheel.
Oh, so you're just talking shit for no reason.
Yeah.
This is why I wanted him out, everybody. Cookie's actually really mean to me off air.
Yep.
And that's
why
canon.
I started growing my hair back. Because fuck you.
Honestly, I haven't been up to anything exciting or interesting. Like getting a car was the biggest thing for me, and it took a long time. And my friends think that there's a character in Anthem who looks like me. So I have a second doppelganger in the video game world. So there's that.
And so now you're playing Anthem.
I am not playing Anthem. I'm just hearing about Anthem.
Your friends are playing Anthem?
I have some friends that have picked it up.
You'll have to tell me what they think, because I will be honest with you. I was kind of bored and disappointed during the beta.
The the best quote that I heard on Discord was my best friend Connor smashing what I don't know what key it was, but just smashing his keys going, look, I'm progressing the plot.
Wow.
Yeah. So kudos to him. He's a riot. I'm sure there's like 20 quotes if I listen long enough that we could feed in here. But it sounds like mechanically it's entertaining. And that particular group of friends that has picked it up are very big fans of sort of grindy games. They all enjoyed Destiny at one point or another, whether it was Destiny 1 or Destiny 2, or for some of them, both. So,
did they get into Division?
I don't think they ever played the Division. Sorry to yawn right into the mic.
How dare you?
It's good audio, guys. It really adds a human element.
Don't
to my
you know
voice.
Yawning is contagious? We don't want to catch that through our airwaves.
That's right.
I just did that on camera. But
I can
on
spread
air.
It everywhere. But they seem to be enjoying it, and that made me curious about the Metacritic scores for this game. It's a little over the map or around the map between PS4, PC, and Xbox 360. No, I'm sorry, Xbox One.
You thought higher number must be a higher console.
Higher number must be better. No, it's just I forget that Xbox is even a thing sometimes because I've delineated from that market so much. But looking at both the PC reviews and then at the Xbox reviews, which I think the PC was 50 for its score, 50%. And the Xbox is 65, and PlayStation is closer to the, I think it's closer to 60, if I remember correctly. So that's a 15-point spread between the consoles. It seems like PC, it's gotten the most critical score. But what I find very interesting on the split is there's a lot more positive user reviews than there are mixed responses. And the negative responses are normally close to the positive or a little under. In the case of the Xbox, which I think has the best review, the user score is, what, is that 5.2 out of 5? 4.2 out of 10. Whew.
I was going to say 5.2 out of 5. That's beyond
godlike. I meant
godlike.
To say 4.2 out of 5, yeah. Anthem is amazing is what I'm trying to say, guys. What I see is that the critics really have mixed to negative reviews on all of these platforms. Meanwhile, people who are picking up the game, depending on how shallow of an experience that they want or how interested they are in, say, story and other elements outside of gameplay and just running through the grind, it seems like if you're in a game for a grind, Anthem is performing relatively well and people are really enjoying it. Critics don't seem to like it. Most of the reviews I've read seem to indicate that it's sort of a soulless game. Like, it doesn't have necessarily the same je ne sais quoi that a well-written, well-conceptualized like world and story can create that BioWare has been known for, at least with their Mass Effect games.
Before half of their writing staff left?
Yeah, exactly. Once your writing staff is gone, you only have the gameplay elements. So it seems like they've done good, or they've done right by what their skills are remaining, and really tried to work the gameplay elements to their advantage. But there just doesn't seem to be any motivation or reasoning behind the game besides go and like get better loot and kill more enemies.
You could say the same thing about Division, though. And
yeah,
which I also haven't played. The problem is when I talk about these games is I am unfortunately just not necessarily interested in them in the first place. But my interest was piqued by the fact that the difference between critical reviews and user reviews was so distinct.
So I'll say the thing that's kind of keeping me away from the division from God, what's this game called? Anthem.
Anthem.
Start at the beginning of the alphabet. The thing that's keeping me away from Anthem is one thing I'm constantly hearing is you go, you play, you get the loot, you have to go back to the overworld,
uh-huh,
back to like your hub to find out what the loot is, put the loot on, and then you go into a mission to try the loot. If you don't like the loot, well, you're already in the mission, so you've either got to quit out the mission, go back to the overworld to put on something else. There's no like hot swap mechanic of, hey, I just picked up this really cool thing. Awesome. Because Destiny was like, hey, I just picked up this really cool thing. Cool.
Use it. Yeah.
I can use it now / in the overworld on Anthem, it's sounding like it's not a social hub. There's a secondary area for a social hub. So with Destiny, it's like, okay, I go back to the overworld, but I see all these people running around and doing random shit, whereas I'm just going to go in, go out, mess with my vault, get a party together, and go raid or something. This one sounds more like I get to my thing. It's just that area that you walk around slowly in. There's no sprint when you're in that overworld area. I'm not sure if either of you played the beta for Anthem.
I haven't touched it. I'm not really interested in this kind of game.
Makes sense. It wasn't good. I wasn't a fan of just like the mechanic of between the missions. Like mechanically during the missions, like, okay, I can live with this. It wasn't anything like super special for me. But when we talk about video games, by gosh, I'll tell you about The Division 2. And I'll tell you why your friend should switch over.
Okay.
Have you been up to anything else, Scott?
No, that's it. I think we should switch over into video games.
Ouch, Neil.
Yeah.
Neil's just been working all week and he hasn't really had a chance to play a game, but he apparently did beat Suikoden 2, but he can't talk about that now because
it's over.
Yeah.
No, actually, so this week I first and foremost got a new chair.
So
it looks pretty good. Clutch.
It's a gaming chair, and while initially hesitant, I had done like a decent amount of research into all of the chairs available, and if I wasn't buying like a Herman Miller or a Steelcase chair, which I kept my eye out on a Craigslist, and I could not find a single used one in good condition or a single one to begin with that was not like a low base tier model.
Yeah, which one did you end up getting? Because I'm still shopping for a chair. I ended up taking back the chair I bought 2 weeks ago because it wasn't built. I found out later that it was rated for 4 hours of sitting.
So
that's not very useful.
Yeah, not at all. That's kind of... That's sort of like a home office chair. You get home from work, you need to do stuff, and then you get out of it and so forth. So I'm first going to say, I don't know how many gaming chairs come with the same type of ratings that you see with Office.
Zero.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that they... It's either they assume you're going to be in this chair constantly, or they don't want to show the number, one of the two, or a mixture of the two, depending on who the manufacturer is. This one's a... And I'm not, obviously not paid or I'm not getting paid to say anything, so let that be known. The reason I got it, though, is because it happened to be one of the models that I was interested in, or determined I was interested in, and then it happened to, which by the way, I'm not getting paid by MassDrop.com, but show up on MassDrop.com for like a very significant discount.
Which one is it?
It is the Clutch Chairs Throttle series. So I went with Clutch because that was like their brand seemed to be the best received in regards to actually holding up over time and having like decent padding. And they also had a larger lumbar support, which, like, I've used smaller lumbar supports trying out gaming chairs or office chairs with, like, you know, third-party or aftermarket lumbar supports. And I couldn't get behind, like, the smaller ones that are, like, denser and more solid. The Clutch one, on the other hand, is larger and conforms better to, like, the shape of my back, or so I thought it would, and it is right now as we speak. And it's also softer, though, too, because it's still dense, but there's enough padding that like it allows me to really form into the lumbar support. So I'm happy with it. The other thing, too, is that it actually gets high enough for me. I'm a little larger than I think the... Actually, I don't know what the...
Taller?
Yeah, I'm a little taller, but I don't actually know what the average height is now. So I'm 6'1", and most of the office chairs that I've had or computer chairs I've had have always been just a tad bit too short. And since the table I built, you know, using parts from Home Depot is also a little on the higher side, I wanted something that could prop me up just enough so I could keep my arms at like a 90 degree angle and sitting properly. And then to top it off was that this chair allowed me to like literally recline it to the point where I could accidentally fall asleep in it twice this week.
So the CDC says that the average adult male height in the United States is 5'9.5".
Okay, so a little taller. And then the last of it was that I got a chair that was rated well above my weight, just with the mindset of, like, I might not be 350 pounds, but if a chair is built to, you know, support that level, I have a lot of room to grow into.
How much was it? Did it end up being?
Let me double check.
I'm just curious now at this point. You could bleep this out if you want or not. Because I've been looking into gaming chairs as well at this point, because either you're going to spend $2,000 on an actual good chair.
Yeah, like the lowest I found for an office chair was like $700 for something that seemed to be reliable enough and was rated for, you know, like more than 8 hours of use.
I use a tin folding chair for all of my stuff. Sure, my back has like a permanent deformation in it now, but I'm saving money every day so I can pay for that surgery.
I paid $300 for the throttle series.
Oh, I need to get rid of my folding chair.
But I also want to point out too that like I definitely feel like this is probably a very polarizing subject, because like there are a lot of instances where I feel like having an office chair from work would be better, and then there are instances where like this chair definitely is nicer. Like when I'm watching videos or watching shows with Tiffany, I'm usually in this chair or in the chair at my desk, and now like that I can recline back and set, like, you know, set the seat angle as well as the back rest angle, and there's a headrest involved too. Like as I noted, I fell asleep in it twice, and when I say fall asleep, I mean we were watching something, I fell asleep and woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning, and I'm like, oh man, I fell asleep. Hey, my back doesn't hurt though. I guess that's a positive.
That's pretty good. I'm surprised your girlfriend let you sleep like that.
I'm surprised that she wouldn't have like pushed him out of the chair, just ironically.
Well, so apparently I don't snore when I'm sleeping in this chair.
And your eyes stay completely open, so it's hard to tell. She just thinks you're being a dick because you're not responding to any questions.
No, but so what she said once was like, it was the best 3 or 4 hours of sleep I've had in years. And I was like, okay.
Nice. I'll have to, I think I'm going back to Nebraska Furniture Mart to see if those one gaming chairs are still on sale. Because, yeah, I think that's what I'll end up doing.
I'm going to upgrade to a stool.
But like, I want to make a point to say that I wouldn't have gotten this if it wasn't on such a steep sale. And I also like, this is like a weekend of having it. So I don't know if I'm going to come out next week and be like, my back hurts tremendously.
Fuck this shit.
So you never know. But that's not all I did this week. That's all I did aside from video games. So we can shimmy on over to video games and other games involving boards and pieces. Cookie, what have you been playing?
As mentioned before, the Division 2 beta is actually open this weekend for PC, Xbox, and PlayStation. And my God, I now remember why me and my wife and my brother played so much of this fucking game. It is the loot-based grinding game that you're not into, Scott, but it does some things differently. So one of the things I mentioned that I did not like about the Anthem was the fact that when you get into your hub worlds, you're kind of there by yourself. In the Division 1, anytime you would go into like the main base of operations, you would be in there by yourself unless you're in a party with somebody. And even then, they would still disappear to go into their own main base of operations.
Mm-hmm.
In the Division 2, if you're partied up with people, when you go into the main base of operations, i.e. the White House in this one, because it's set in D.C., your party's with you the entire step of the way. Like, no crazy load screens. One thing that I like about this is they set it in like a real world setting. Issue with the first game was like when you get to the higher levels, things become bullet sponges, and that doesn't make sense if you're fighting a human being.
Right.
So what they've done, we've killed a couple of high level, higher level things than we should be dealing with. And what they do is they give them a shit ton of armor. So if a person's wearing like an armor piece on like their shoulder, if you shoot that, eventually it will come off. And then if you start shooting them in the shoulder, they are still a human being under there. So their health goes down tremendously. So it becomes a game of, hey, everybody focus fire, not particularly on this guy's head, but in his chest, because that's the biggest area.
Yeah.
So as soon as we get that chest piece off, he's going to take like 3 or 4 bullets and then he's going to go down because he is still a human being. Story-wise, we have just been kind of skipping over whatever the story is because it's just the beta. And if we do decide to get this game eventually, we'll dig deeper into the story. But I kind of liked the thing that was the Division 1, so this is a continuation of it. The story for Division 1 was there was an outbreak in New York City, Black Friday. A person basically manufactured a disease and put it on cash and then just let that cash spread out. So Black Friday in New York, one of the biggest shopping days, lots of cash is exchanging hands, even though that really wouldn't work because cash doesn't exchange hands nowadays.
Yeah.
Everyone's
Black Plague
just swiping
Friday
cards.
Would not affect that many people these days.
Pretty much. But like, so this one was basically, hey, the first game happens, you're an agent that was stationed in New York when you got the call. So you're slowly taking back New York. The game's story mode are, it's stories slash echoes that you could find, ended on you actually finding the guy's hideout who actually manufactured the disease,
mm-hmm.
and he had already left New York. So the second game is you are now an agent in D.C., a little bit after the
Division
game,
One ends. Yeah.
After Division One ends. So I did end up like listening to an echo basically talking. It was the guy from the first game who manufactured the disease, and they were talking, and he was like, so yeah, I know that you're hunting me, but because people are always asking, so are you gonna make another disease? He's like, maybe I am. Maybe I'm not, but what would I gain? So he's kind of like, so they're kind of like setting up the mystery of blah, blah, blah. And he's like, hopefully maybe one day you'll get to meet me and ask me yourself in person. But until then, ta-ta for now was his recording that he left. But like gameplay wise, it's still got the really tight shooting mechanics that I expect from the Division games, which is basically everything that you get from all the other Ubisoft shooters that you guys probably don't play. So your Far Cry's slash your, oh God, what was that other one?
I've played Far Cry.
Yeah, basically your Far Cry's slash your what you call it. So it's got really nice gameplay mechanics. One of the main critiques that the other game had was that its Dark Zone was kind of meh until eventually it got balanced and tweaked enough to where it just became strictly for hardcore players. I haven't had a chance to get into the Dark Zone for this beta, but the changes I'm reading about, they're saying that they made the Dark Zone what it should have been in the first one, so you're not going to want to wander off by yourself. The AI in the game is intelligent enough to, like, if one group of AI sees you and they know that there's another group of AI nearby, they'll call for help. So that way you can get pincered in, so you'll want to be with your teammates. Not all loot you find in the Dark Zone is going to be contaminated, so you can extract it without doing the crazy extraction scenarios. But yeah.
And what exactly is the Dark Zone for context?
PvP.
The Dark Zone is the PvP area. So there's all of DC slash New York was the PvE zone. but they had certain areas cordoned off. Well, one area in Division 1 cordoned off for the Dark Zone, which was the PvP. So whenever you came across another human being, you could choose to fight them or you could choose not to fight them. In this one, apparently, they were going to have three distinct Dark Zones. They, as of right now, have a schedule week by week. They will have a special Dark Zone on just one of them, which will be a occupied zone. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be higher tiered enemies and much better rewards, basically. So it's going to be just a tougher zone for the more hardcore players.
Mm-hmm.
And they also wanted to God, what's the word? Not identify, but like fix the issue of a lot of people played the Division for a really long time and then they just stopped playing the Division. Me, my sister, my brother being one of them. Three of the people that did that, they want to address that by they've introduced skirmish modes.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a skirmish and a domination. So it's just a 4v4 team deathmatch or a 4v4 hold 3 points, basically. So that'll also help alleviate the issue of, okay, after you beat the story, play around in the Dark Zone. If you're more of that traditional cover-based shooter, I want to just go out and kill some people for a couple of minutes. You can then play it that way. So I've been playing not a lot of that, but we got about 3 or 4 hours into that.
Have you backstabbed your party at any point in time yet, Cookie?
So there is no friendly fire.
That's
how about unfriendly fire, though?
What was that?
Unfriendly fire when you shoot at your teammates.
That one. So there's no friendly fire unless you're in the occupied Dark Zone. That's when they turn on friendly fire.
Mm.
But so no, I have not tried to screw over anybody. I am the healer of our group because I'm usually the healer for whatever reason. I like being healer.
Oh, so that's actually the best time to screw people over because it's just your incompetence that does it.
Exactly. So it's like, Derry, you're
dead. You're really, here, you're, I can't save really you, but let me pick up your loot for you.
Exactly. But yeah, so no screwing over my teammates besides, I think at one point, Lizzie and Derry were in a fight, and I just went, fuck this shit, I'm out, and quite literally just ran away from the fight.
Did you talk-sing it like that? Fuck
yes.
This shit, I'm out. Da-da-da.
Yeah, that's the Vine, the old Vine from back in the day.
Really? I never like into Vine or got on Vine.
You know, Vine was already canceled as a platform before I learned about any of the Vines.
Basically same.
Ditto. I'm just finding out about these like 2 months ago and I'm loving them.
Yo,
gosh.
Yeah. I've watched a large number of compilation videos.
Yep. So that's the Division 2. Oh, I will also say usually one thing that people do whenever they see a game in a Ubisoft game during E3, they usually say, hey, this is the press E3 thing, because did you guys see like the Watch Dogs 1 E3 compared to the actual game? Basically, like a lot of assets were showing up, like a lot of assets would show up and they would show like really cool features and like details of like trash blowing across the street and things like that. And then by the time you get to the game, it's kind of all less vividly colored, slash there's not nearly as many assets. So usually during E3, you can see very beautiful sets, and then as soon as you get the game, it's No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
Huh.
So basically that this game feels very fucking lived in just based on the beta. Hopefully they don't like do a lot of downgrading, but like there's overgrown vegetation, you do see like pieces of paper and trash and stuff like being blown by wind.
Mm.
Away from you or towards you or whatever, going in their directions. There's like deer and elk and like other random animals besides just dogs wandering around, because Washington, D.C. is kind of a nature-y area. And when you're actually inside of each of the safe houses, they've updated it enough to where, like, people aren't just standing around inside of the safe house just waiting to be talked to. People are actually, like, walking around doing things.
Stuff. Yeah.
And it's nice. The game feels so much more lived in than it used to.
That is, like, always a thing that you can tell when your map designers, your art team is doing their job well. Like, it's you don't notice it until you see, like, the details in the environment that make you feel like this is actually a world. There's stuff going on here. Is there a lot of interior stuff in The Division 2? The beta, at least?
I would say there's just as much interior stuff as there was in the first one, but there might be more. We've kind of stayed on the beaten path, but I played like an hour by myself where I was just kind of like wandering the fuck around. So there are certain buildings that you could just like, buildings that's just a hallway, or one building that I went to led into a basement that led into the sewer system of DC. There was so like The Division 1 wasn't very bad about like, hey, you're just in the streets. There were a couple of buildings here and there that you could actually like, oh, there's an open doorway. Let me see what's going on inside. So we've been in a couple of interior settings. Seems about even with what I experienced on The Division 1 so far, but we also only got to explore one biome, really. But yeah, that's my, I would say if you are that loot-based grinding shooter type of player, to at least give it a checkout, because I'll say check it out, not because if you're like, hey, you want the coolest looking thing, maybe not, because this is based in the real world, so you're actually just fighting humans with somewhat futuristic / just normal technology, so a lot of your visual aesthetics aren't going to change very much. But when it comes to just how the world is built, and the system of the bullet sponge on The Division 2 is just fucking awesome, with the whole, hey, just knock off his armor and he's going to go down like a sack of potatoes, and it's beautiful. The way the specialist abilities work in this one have been like updated. So one of my favorite things to use is this Kim launcher. So it's a little gun that looks like a flare gun, but depending on what you pack it with, there's one that does like the, you know, great stuff, or like the foam that like spreads out and hardens.
Yeah.
So basically there's one that you could shoot that'll actually like trap the enemy, because it'll do like a little AOE of like foam, and that foam will like expand and then harden around the person's foot, and they'll like be freaking out.
It's like
they can still shoot at you, but
yeah, it's like the glue gun in Prey or playing a Spider-Man game.
Yeah, it's basically that.
Yep.
The one I was using was it would shoot like a cloud, like a gas canister, and then if you shot the gas that was there, it would all like ignite and set everyone on fire. So that's beautiful. They've got they're like different variants on. So the old game had a turret. So this one's got a turret. You could either just use like the normal turret. So you could choose to target somebody by aiming and then calling out that person by pushing L1, and then they would then the turret itself would like focus fire on that one enemy.
Yeah.
But then they also have a sniper rifle turret.
Mm-hmm.
So you set down the turret, get into a better position. And then you can target. This one doesn't auto-target, so you've got to target somebody. You can target a person. So if you have an initiated combat and you've got the turret set up, you shoot them with the turret. All the enemies are going to face the turret instead of you.
Yeah.
At that point. Because, obviously, the person shooting at them is over there. So, yeah. So it's got weird and great things. I'll say, if you are into that grinder shooter, we're not sure how the end game is going to be. I do know Division 1 got pretty bad on the, okay, there are like 7 or 8 main missions. I think it was ended up being like 10 or something. There are these main missions, and your daily / weeklies are do this mission today. This week, you've got to do this mission on this difficulty, basically. hopefully they get more of like a raid scenario, but we will see. Fingers crossed. I would say that's a good game to play for grindy shooters. Besides that, I finally beat the Pirates of the Caribbean level in Kingdom Hearts. It's got a ship-based navigation fighting system.
Mm-hmm.
And it is... It exists.
It's not good?
It's good. It's not bad. It's not like... It's
mediocre is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's not as in-depth as, say, what Ubisoft is doing with their ship-based naval combat nowadays.
Yeah.
But it's also not as bad as what it could have been. It's a very basic thing. It's got really cool, like a really interesting way to upgrade your ship. So, you know, the little white crabs that... Did you guys see Pirates of the Caribbean?
I know that crabs can be white.
Yes. So
I know crabs can be any ethnicity they choose to be. No, so, yeah, I haven't watched it, but...
One comment I read about Kingdom Hearts 3 was that they don't really do the movies that you're doing, the worlds that you're doing, any justice, like really good justice, if you haven't seen the movies. So if you're not a huge Disney fan, don't play Kingdom Hearts, I guess. There are good, like some of the best worlds. Some of the best worlds I hear are the ones that don't follow a story beat for beat. So the Toy Story world had nothing to do with any of the Toy Story movies. But the Pirates of the Caribbean ended up following No Man's Land or Dead Man's Chest, whichever not the last Pirates of the Caribbean was, but the one before that with Will and Sarah and them. Mm. But basically Calypso's crabs, you could collect them to upgrade your ship to do...
Crab stuff?
Yeah. You could use those to upgrade your ship.
Your ship can scuttle sideways now, and you can outstrafe your enemy.
You can also get some penicillin for... Wait, no, you can't probably treat crabs with that, can you? But
yeah, so either way, you use the... you collect crabs by, like, visiting islands. There's, like, this nice little... God damn it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking you collect crabs by going to truck stops as well. It's just all upon what approach you want to take.
Exactly. So there's this beautiful overworld that they give you a nice little piratey themed map and a bunch of islands you could explore. And by breaking barrels in crates, you can find crabs and you collect them. And those crabs would then help you via upgrading your ship, giving your ship new special abilities. Either way, I beat the pirate ship world. Now I'm on Big Hero 6.
Nice.
More to come.
That is actually really cool that they included Big Hero 6 into this game, because I think that's like an unspoken of, oft unmentioned, fantastic movie.
No, that makes sense. It was a really good movie. And
I can also see how it'd be rife with opportunity for gamification.
It's pretty much just a game in itself.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm starting San Francisco, Tokyo. Either way, I'm at Big Hero 6 area, and Final Fantasy Dissidia is going free to play.
Is that like the weird not fighter?
Yeah, it was Final Fantasy versus 13.
So we know that game bombed horribly, apparently.
Yeah. And Dead or Alive 6's season pass is $96.
And it's going to do exceedingly well, because that's how you get the boobies.
Pretty much. It's super exciting that it's $96 and it comes with two playable characters.
But the boobs, the outfits.
I was going to say it's like 56 outfits.
Don't you want honkers to wear like something a little more revealing? Oh, for context, I don't know if either of you know who Honker is, but a character's name is Honoka in the game. And I believe, unless things have changed, she has the largest bust measurement. It's a meme, okay? I don't have to like justify myself in knowing this shit. The fact that her name is Honkers, or like that people call her Honkers, is, you know, evidence enough.
Does she have the largest bust? I guess she would.
I don't know. You tell me. You you may know better than I do.
Well, because like half of her, most of the costumes that you see her in is the one where she's wearing the cow. God, what's that thing called?
The cow bikini is the cow kigurumi? Print bikini.
Is it a kigurumi?
No, it's the thing that farmers wear.
Overalls.
Yeah, she wears cow print overalls. So wait, what's the largest size? Is H the largest size?
I think it depends on what country of measurement you're going off of, because we in America, I think, do something involving like doubling, tripling, and so forth up on letters. But in other countries...
No, because Chrissy apparently is a incorrect plus four method corresponding. I'm on a game facts page right now where they've meticulously done the details.
You know what you could do instead? You can just look up in Google who has the biggest breasts in DOA.
Rachel, apparently.
Breast sizes measured. Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate Message Board. And this is Game Facts as well.
Yep, so that's the one I was on.
Rachel 28H. Tina, 28GG.
Yeah, no, Rachel's got a much bigger bust than Honks, Honoka.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I see Honoka in this list at all, either. Who is Rachel?
She's the, she's one of the white chicks.
You mean like Tina? Is she a white chick?
Tina is also a white chick. Plus, this is from Dead or Alive 5.
Yeah, this character, like, must apparently not be that popular, because, like, I don't follow the DOA series that well at all. I like the gameplay. It's basically Virtua Fighter. But I don't recognize this character at all.
No, it's a great show. I mean, great game. Like, it is a really good fighter.
Well, Scott, what have you been playing this week? Assuming that's all you've...
All I've done video game-wise is play more Hollow Knight. I'm really trying to get into experiencing all of the free DLCs and updates to the game since I beat it almost 2 years ago. There's a bunch of new runes to collect. I've found a couple, and holy shit, have they been like game-changing on my charm equip load. Or not equip load, but like on the equip charms. When I played the game the first time, I was super heavily committed to like doing physical damage and taking all the charms that just gave me like better striking range and more damage and like more functional ability with my nail. But playing with all of these like updated charms that they've added, I've been able to try some like much more complex and weird strategies. I've also been looking into like secret charm combinations that change like the functionality of these modifiers to your character's abilities or like special attributes. For instance, in this game, you can pick up charms that when you do a neutral focus of like your spirit gauge, you're able to heal your character, and that's the primary function before you equip modifying charms. But I've found a combination, for instance, that takes a charm that causes you to emit like toxic spores whenever you finish a charge of one, like essentially life bar, or in this game, it would be a mask, that you can combine it with another one that leaves a toxic cloud to actually create an even bigger like toxic cloud for DOT damage, as opposed to a smaller radius cloud emitted via movement or just upon charge with the two charms separately. And then with a third charm that allows you to focus to get two masks per charge, you can increase the space even greater. So it's really interesting now that I'm finally getting to the point where I can play around with weird combinations and like meta strategies for gameplay that can turn it from this like melee combat based Metroidvania to like a spell casting build in the game where you almost never have to hit things with your melee attack, or even like a game where positioning and setting up this broken like DOT attack can clear a room of like difficult enemies immediately. There's not, I haven't fought any of the new boss fights yet, so I don't know how effectively like some of these strategies work for boss fights as well, because the difficult part is to set up some of these weird charm strategies is you have to get quite far through the game to have enough slots to equip them. But there so far isn't anything I've encountered that's completely like broken or changed the game. But being able to play different, like wholly different play styles is bringing a lot of freshness back to it. I'm surprised I'm having this much fun from picking up something I thought I had more or less completed start to finish the last time I played. Yeah, I don't know. It's also, it's a game that the more I play, the more I appreciate the speedrun potential as well for even someone who is sluggish and gets lost a lot like I do in Metroidvania games. Just having like vague memories of where to go or what I need to do to get through something has made navigating this particularly like complex world map really interesting, as I'm like optimizing my movement from one end of the map to the other to complete objectives or pick up like new charms or defeat bosses and explore other areas. And they've introduced something I didn't notice previously, but a like self like a map system in which you can place pins on your overworld map to actually indicate like locations to check out. There were already pins that gave you all sorts of information based on like characters you can interact with as merchants, to benches you can rest at, to hot springs that refill your health and your spirit meter. But now you can actually take pins of varying colors to designate different things, whatever you want to attribute to them, and mark a place where you think there might be a secret located, or where there was a tough fight that you want to return to, or something of that nature, which has also made navigating the world more convenient and more interesting, as I'm able to actually remember the things that I've interacted with and come back to it a later time, versus seeing something thinking, I can't get past this now, or I can't interact with it, so I'll try and remember it, and then getting totally thrown off track by something else I encounter halfway across the map in a different location and completely spacing on the mental note I tried to take earlier. I'm super hyped for Silk Song. The more I play this game, the more confidence I have that any follow-up to this original Hollow Knight game is going to be pretty damn good, even if they stick to the same formula. But judging from the video that they released for that trailer, they're going to have a lot more like complex mechanics that they'll be bringing into, or complex mechanics and also a like greater item set or kit to work with in the game. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to be coming up in Silk Song when it finally releases, probably at the end of the year. So my hype will fizzle out a bit. But
so I heard someone recently describe Hollow Knight as being the best Metroidvania game ever. Would you agree with that assessment? I mean, yes. Obviously there are things like this game is made after decades and decades of video game design, so they have the advantage of that, right?
I would say probably the thing that, and I've thought about this question before, and I'm glad that you asked it, because I wasn't sure if I ever wanted to actually breach the topic, but now I'm being forced to make like a definitive decision. I cannot think of another Metroidvania, but also I have to point out that I also haven't played any Castlevania games, which means that I'm missing half of the formula, or at least half of the reference material in Castlevania.
And even then, it's only half of the Castlevania games that actually follow the Metroidvania style, too.
That's good to know. I mean, because Metroid, in a sense, only the 2D Metroid games really apply for Metroidvania as well. I think the Metroid Prime series is very unique And Metroid Other M doesn't really count as a Metroidvania game for me either, because it's a lot more linear in its map design and progression. I would have to say that it probably is the best Metroidvania game I've played, partially because at this point in time, I am more receptive to a new IP coming into the fold. And I am already like, I'm already spoiled by the sort of like dark and very interesting world design of games like Dark Souls, and the fact that I think they also take inspiration from that by having a cast of characters that don't have very much dialogue, but every single location, whether it's its art or its characters or just the enemies that you face, all have suggestions to a deeper plot that you have to piece together yourself, that is not necessarily displayed in the Metroid games as much. I can think of my favorite Metroidvania before Hollow Knight was probably Metroid Fusion, which was a game that I think encapsulated the idea of like powerlessness and fear so perfectly when you began it. And as Samus, you essentially are trying to re-equip all of your lost gear that's been surgically removed from you because some parasite has fused with you, Samus Aran, and your suit, and has cloned you essentially with all of your upgraded abilities. So an overpowered clone of you that is trying to kill you is moving around this spaceship the whole time that you're trying to re-equip yourself to take it out first. And there are segments where you get essentially put into tight corridors or spaces where you're like hiding and just trying to avoid death from an enemy that can kill you at any second. I thought it had, in combination with those story elements and that very unique style of gameplay, the rest of the gameplay and the environments that they had and the power-up abilities that they used were all very, very entertaining and fun and made for a great experience. But Hollow Knight is just so unique, and especially with all of the updates and the free DLC that they've added, they've given so much more life to approaches to play the game differently than any Metroid game I've ever played in the Metroidvania genre has allowed. So partially, in the Metroid games, which I have the most experience with outside of Hollow Knight for this, you're always going to be shooting, you're always going to be firing missiles or beams, and there's going to be enemies that pretty much one strategy will work effectively on. In Hollow Knight, there do seem to be multiple approaches you can take to all sorts of enemies that have just as diverse or more diverse of a like range of attacks and approaches. And so it's all of the core elements of Metroidvania with, I think, additional elements and flair that make it even more diverse and entertaining and approachable for different play styles. I feel like it, I hope that that was a valid argument, but I haven't played Castlevania, and I know that they have different abilities, and I know that they have different, I guess, options for approaching enemies, and I don't know how varied that is, but that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about Hollow Knight that I never experienced with the Metroid games, the 2D ones at least.
The Metroid side of Metroidvania?
Yeah, it felt like, yeah, it felt like the fun, swift, and tight controls in combat of Shovel Knight, but in much more realized maps and like freedom of movement.
It's hard for me to judge too without having played Hollow Knight, like the validity of your arguments.
I absolutely think you should pick it up. It's just, it's not a game that if you've played a Castlevania game, I just don't think it's a game that you're going to feel like you got a lemon on. I feel like you most likely would pick it up, and as long as you don't have the time or distractions, like you would be drawn into it deep enough to enjoy the full experience.
So the one thing that keeps me away is that Hollow Knight's playtime is exceedingly long from what I've gathered.
It's like 30 hours or 35 if you play through the whole thing. And it's $20. Like, the how the amount of bang for your buck is really hard to compare to with this kind of game.
And it's not that so much. It's just that, like, these years, it's been easier. Like, I set large chunks of time aside for specific games that, like, my interest is just so high on, right? And then aside from that, it's so much easier for me to enjoy games that have shorter run times. Or,
I think what is really valuable about this game in particular is it's on the Switch, though.
Yeah.
And the Switch allows portability, and it is a game that can be played in 15-minute bursts, and those will still be very entertaining. The only thing I would say is maybe follow a guide to some extent if you get really lost, because at 15-minute bursts, you can lose track of what you're doing more easily. But that is the only downside I see to playing it piecemeal like that. And that time really builds up. If you did 10 minutes on a lunch break every day, Monday through Friday, you're clocking in almost an hour of game time on that alone. And it's very convenient and easy. And each play time could be just one or two things that you accomplish. You could find a secret or have a boss fight, but then your 10 minutes are probably up. So I also think it would keep your interest and the engagement of the game very high the whole way through.
Someday soon. Someday in a basement near you.
I just cannot recommend it high enough.
I guess, did you play anything else this week?
No, that's really all I did.
Well, I'll start with something that's not necessarily video game, or it's not a video game quite yet. But anyone that's been listening to the podcast probably knows I've been really, really high on the Nonary Games series, or the Zero Escape series, which is a series of visual novels with escape room components, along with usually an extremely convoluted and ridiculous mystery that gets solved in an equally ridiculous plot twist. Well, I've been putting the third game in the trilogy on hold for a bit, and meanwhile, just kind of following up on what the director is doing nowadays. And in 2018, they released their first trailer, or teaser rather, for a game called AI : The Somnium Files. And I might be pronouncing that incorrectly. It's a Latin word to refer to dreams. So the dream files, which don't need to get too far into it, but it's assumedly a mystery game, visual novel most likely as well. That's probably confirmed at this point, where you control or play as a detective who has an artificial eye that can actually go through the dreams of other players and people, or of other characters, of assumedly deceased characters. And that's a good image, by the way.
Sorry.
And they introduced him and then a female character with pink hair, very anime style. Well, so recently the director showed up on YouTube at this channel that is named like Lemniscate, I think. And in the channel, the director, you know, introduces himself, like his real life identity and shit, and then says that they're starting a new AI virtual YouTuber, and it's actually this character from the video game that he's directing. And from then on, like, every other video that has shown up on this page has essentially been like a Kizuna Ai video. I don't know if you know who Kizuna Ai is, but
but I can look it up.
She's a quote-unquote a artificial YouTuber, or in other words, a CG or three-dimensional 3D CGI or model, I should say, character on YouTube that does videos and let's plays and other things. But so this seems to be very much like it, with this character being introduced in this new game, except there's a lot of like somewhat creepy stuff that happens. Like in random videos, she'll start talking about essentially the equivalent of this other world's Illuminati, and like she closes out all of her episodes by saying, okay, I'll see you next week unless I get kidnapped or something. I have a feeling that that game is going to be about this girl getting kidnapped, and there are going to be
something.
Clues. But I found the whole thing to be kind of interesting because, and maybe I'll have to throw this into the show notes as well, the link for the channel. But because like it starts off as a as a virtual idol that, or at least they're introducing her as a virtual idol. And then immediately after, it breaks off into what seems like it's no longer taking place in the real world, in this actual fictitious world that they're creating in the video game, because she doesn't, she never acknowledges being a virtual idol or anything like that. So I'm sure that's going to be full of mindfuck. And if you want to watch along, I think it's like every Wednesday they release a new video. I'm sure there's some ARG components that are going to be in it as well. Aside from that, though, I finished Persona 4 Dancing All Night, and I spoke quite a bit of that about that last week. It did exactly what I wanted it to do, and shit, it's more Persona 4 content, and while it is a little campy at times, I guess you could say, it like ultimately serves its purpose.
A little dancey at times.
Yeah, very dancey at times. As Cookie alluded to, I did beat Suikoden 2 yesterday.
Sorry.
I did want to spend a little bit of time talking about it, especially if anyone from the streams are coming over to this podcast. I think it still lives up to its identity as being potentially one of the best JRPGs, or I guess you could say RPGs, ever. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the game, like, it's not so much in its mechanics, but more about the extras and the plot. Like, there's a Iron Chef mode in the game, or an Iron Chef contest, or contests. The concept of Suikoden in general is that it's based off of very, very loosely based off of its source material being about essentially a bunch of bandits that end up doing good for the people and the I don't remember what Chinese dynasty, but like they're heroes basically, despite being bandits and shit. You in most of these games bring up a group of rebels or some other form of resistance against a greater power. And in the process, you have to, you know, populate your castles with your 108 recruits and other characters. One of the characters is a chef, and as the chef is minding his own business in this castle trying to manage his restaurant, people keep challenging him because of plot reasons specific to his story. And it's great because you essentially amass this huge book of recipes ranging from like a lot of Japanese dishes to things like pasta and pizza and more common things in the West as well, hamburgers, etc. And then they multiply what you can make off of those recipes by adding one of five side ingredients or seasonings. So one thing that I remember pretty well is that your burger starts off... Oh, wait, no, actually, I don't remember some of the components of that one. Your ice cream is ice cream with no added seasonings. If you add sugar to it, it becomes pudding. Obviously, it's not like meant to be realistic, but it's like this is how they expand upon your recipe book. If you add salt, it becomes Nanami Ice, Nanami Ice, which is named after one of your characters who's alluded to being terrible at cooking, because why would you add copious amounts of salt to ice cream? and so like it gives you an even deeper pool of recipes to choose from. The best part to me, though, is that aside from having ridiculous storylines that kind of feel inspired by the Japanese Iron Chef, which I don't know if you guys have seen much of that, but whenever people challenge Chef Morimoto, the Japanese chef, they had convoluted plots about how Iron Chef Morimoto was, you know, going too far with his radical ideas, and we as like a traditional cooking school need to put him back down and teach him that orthodox is the best way of cooking Japanese food.
But then he dunks on them.
Typically.
By adding more salt to ice cream.
Yeah, Iron Chef Japan was extremely anime. Like, it's great. But the best part about it, about the Suikoden 2 cooking battles, aside from the fact that in and of itself a cooking battle is cool, is that you also had your panel of four judges filled from from the pool of 107 characters. That doesn't include your protagonist, obviously. So you not only have to like figure out what dishes would perform the best, but you have to figure out what dishes would perform the best to this wide palette of characters, ranging from insane to, hey, it's a fucking flying squirrel on my judges panel. What do I feed him? But along with that, like I wanted to touch a bit about like what I felt the game really did live up to and what it might have dropped the ball a bit on. Like, the story as a whole still really lives up to its reputation. It's like maybe the first game I can think of that accurately depicts, or not accurately per se, but it depicts a story of a war where neither side is quote unquote good. And they really drive that point home throughout the course of the story, through the conclusion as well. There was only one thing that really nagged at me, and I think it was maybe a little too on the nose, but like that whole idea of duality on both sides exists, where you have evil on one side and you have evil on the other side, and there's good on both sides as well. Two of like the goon antagonist characters, if you will, like they're not really relevant to the plot, but they're there to essentially be voices on the enemy's side, much like how your cast in the good, quote unquote, good side has characters to put different opinions in. They even go as far as to say, you know, like at just before killing them, basically saying like, why would we bow down to you evil, like city state scum or something to that extent of like, you know, this is our home. And like, we believe in the cause that main antagonist is fighting for, who is an authoritarian who believes that having like a strong central power is important to ensuring peace for everyone. Like his vision is, I need to become the best king ever so I can make sure my land is peaceful. Whereas you're part of a city state, a republic that has shown on multiple occasions that there's a lot of disorganization and corruption. So, you know, as in your face as that, but there is one scene in the game where the main antagonist, who is this authoritative figure, decides to sacrifice his wife. Or so it would seem. He decides to use his wife as a blood sacrifice to quote unquote boost morale and other things. He does this at the end of the game, which, speaking of which, there are spoilers that I'm talking about, but this game was made in 1999, so I'm not super worried about that. He does this after he knows that his kingdom is forfeit. He is fucked up. They've lost the war. He uses it to essentially kill, quote unquote, kill his wife to ensure that she can live peacefully someplace else. So they use a doll is what they call it. And he also does it, I think, to basically convince his people that he's a bad king. Because human sacrifice is obviously like evil, even by standards of like the Middle Ages, or at least modern depiction of the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
And it's like an opportunity to show off this character who is so well thought and has like sacrificed so much to still be able to know what to do to try and direct his soldiers, like try and put doubt into his soldiers now that he knows that the end is coming and like the enemy is basically on his doorstep. But instead, like, so I see the validity of like the character's desire to set up this ridiculous human sacrifice to vilify himself and to basically create a fake death for, you know, the queen, so she can go live in a different country, essentially. But then the people, the soldiers, react in a super positive, hyped way after watching their queen get sacrificed. And so much that even Joey, the main antagonist, is like, that went too well, to his strategist. And it's just, I don't know, for a game that like obviously has other plot holes and stuff, so it's not like it's imperfect or anything. I just didn't understand why they chose to put that scene in, because it actually makes the soldiers of the supposing kingdom seem like major assholes, when throughout the entire game, like the script and the story is very careful to give justifications to both sides of the war. And then suddenly, dude, these guys love blood sacrifices, especially when they're queens.
Woo-woo.
Fucking burn her body, or stab her body, who cares? But it was still, it's fantastic. Next week, I didn't stream this morning because I'm gonna improve the streaming setup, but next week we'll be starting Suikoden 3, which is like similarly hailed for having a great approach between two forces in war, so much so that you actually control multiple protagonists, one on one side, one on another, and the third is kind of like an outlooker before stuff happens, and maybe everyone becomes friends. Who knows?
Fire Emblem, third option.
Exactly.
And Romance of the Fire Emblem Kingdoms.
What is it? I think it's Echoes. Fire Emblem. No, it's not Echoes. I don't remember what they called the third
option. You mean Fire Emblem Conquest and Birthright?
Yeah, whatever the third one was.
Oh, Revelations?
Revelations, that's what it is. Fire Emblem Revelations.
Speaking of Suikoden 2, I don't know if you guys follow too many Twitter accounts, but especially of like video game nerds, we'll say, and specifically Japanese ones, because I think they still are like very appreciative of the Suikoden series in general. But there's a lot of memes happening around Suikoden 2 and the new Pokemon games, which have been dubbed Pokemon
Sword and Shield.
And speaking of Pokemon Sword and Shield, that game looks like everything I wanted out of a Pokemon game for the past 10 years.
Britain?
Yes, Britain. Maybe crumpets? Okay. Can we feed our Pokemon crumpets and biscuits, which are cookies, for those of you heathens that don't know the true meaning of biscuit?
Hello, I am crumpets.
No, so last week there was a Nintendo Direct that basically revealed the two Pokemon games, and I don't really know how like the whole community is actually approaching
this. I think
people
are very excited.
That's kind of what I got into. There are a few things after like watching what bits of gameplay we have that I'm kind of disappointed on, and one of those things is I sort of really wish that random battles didn't exist in that game, but that's really the only thing I can nitpick about from what we've seen so far.
That's the only thing dividing the community besides Swords or Shields.
Yeah, I definitely felt like they were taking a direct step forward, and also I thought I should have known from the Let's Go title that they may not carry forward the fact that you can bump into Pokemon in tall grass that are, you know, generated as sprites or models in the grass as opposed to the random unseen battle encounter. But I'm definitely on the side that I feel, since that innovation was implemented, I'd just like to stick with it if possible.
It's the best option. Random encounters are
annoying.
Awful. RNG sucks. Like, if I want to go through a thing, I shouldn't have to be able to count, shouldn't have to go into the speedrunning community, figure out how many steps I can take in Octopath Traveler before there's a 50% chance of me getting an encounter. I'm not sure if you watch the Octopath Traveler speedrun, but they talk about the encounter rates and how many steps you can literally take on a given map before you have to go into like a save screen or something.
Yeah,
before
no,
you get a random encounter.
They are very consistent on that. It's easy to tell after playing a long enough period of time.
That's genius, speaking of which.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd rather not have to figure out the math on how to avoid random encounters, because sometimes you want to just get to the next area because you got a 15-minute lunch break or 15-minute break, and sometimes you want to grind out for 3 hours.
And if you want to grind, you can grind, right? There's nothing stopping you from choosing to grind.
Exactly. Instead, if you don't want to grind, you could just throw a couple of jukes and spin moves and Heisman that hoe.
I really enjoyed, the Bravely Default approach, where it was set your encounter rate from like 0 to 200%. And therefore, there were still random encounters. But when you're just trying to get somewhere, you could have random encounters. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Coming off of like several games where there are random encounters, I'm not saying those games are bad. It was just that was a bad mechanic back then. It's just that was the most plausible way to use a system or to devise a system at that point in time, right? But now that you have all of the resources and all of the game design ideas from the past, you know, however many years since like JRPGs were one of the mainstays in the industry, I feel like random encounters are basically bad game design at this point.
Because they are.
In today, like to this day and age. I also didn't think that like the introduction of Pokemon showing up on the map hindered any of like the gameplay value or elements of like hunting out rare Pokemon either. It's like, it's if it's not a rare Pokemon, you just have to go run someplace else where you can seek out more. It's like a very similar thematic or a similar element to the gameplay. And it's also a lot less painful than having to just run around and get into battles and run or kill the Pokemon, the encounter, and keep doing it until you find that Pokemon. In fact, I think it's even more a more valuable element of having to look at the map and be like, wait, is that Pikachu shit stained? There's the shiny Pikachu. Or even simply, like, you know, you could have made a design decision, which is you don't know if a Pokemon's shiny or not until you actually run into it, right?
Which makes sense, because the grass is tall, but it's not so tall that you're not going to see a fucking Rhyhorn in the grass.
Right.
That's a big-ass Pokemon. I could see, okay, Rattas have a chance of being random encounters because it's tall grass. You're not going to see a small rat in tall grass.
Whereas if you use that as your justification as to why you don't know when you run into Pokemon because of the super tall grass, it doesn't make any sense when you're out in the ocean. Like, it does for the fish that are, like, in the water, but or Pokemon that are actually submerged. But, like, you're gonna realize if a Lapis is coming at you or not.
I love how neither of you guys have actually said these Pokemon names, right? But,
Lapis? Lapis?
Lapras.
Lapras and Rattata. But, yeah, no, I get it. It makes total sense that if it's a Pokemon on top of the water, you should be able to see it. Maybe you have to have a random encounter if a Magikarp is sucking on your toes, but besides that, anything that's like floating or large enough that it shouldn't be concealed by tall grass, we should be able to see it. And therefore, at that point, like if you make that concession, why not just let the trainer be able to see whatever, or even see rustling grass? I think that would be good too. If it's a small Pokemon
rustling,
and you can't see what
rustling
it is.
Grass for, I'd accept rustling grass for any Pokemon.
Yeah.
So that way you could still make the decision to...
Do I want to interact or not?
Yeah. Because even that makes sense.
Yeah. I really am... I'm excited for this game, don't get me wrong. And
ditto,
especially
definitely.
when the third version comes out, Pokemon Gun, or, you know... Pokemon Spear. But I do think that it's inexcusable. They've already built an alternative option that people loved in the only other Pokemon game that's on the Switch. I do not understand why they chose to essentially backpedal this innovation.
I really hope it's a toggle switch that you could just be like, random encounters, no random encounters. That would be the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that'd be ideal.
It absolutely would.
Especially if the fan base is actually divided this much up by it. And I don't think random encounters would make me not want to play this game either. Just
oh no, I'm definitely getting Pokemon Shield and making Nick Fury my Pokemon trainer.
He's not gonna be your professor? Oh, you can't customize the professors, that's right.
You can't customize the professor, but you certainly can customize your main character. I don't think I can give him an eye patch, but I can definitely make him black and bald. So young Nick Fury.
And I've decided I'm going to make all of my characters just old men as much as I can.
Well, you seem a little old to be going out for your first time, Billy, but okay.
I swear I'm 10.
Yeah, so let's talk about like the cool things in that game. And I will be the first to know, as soon as I saw the game checkmark the bullet points that I wanted, at least that I could see from a teaser, I immediately checked out of the video as to not spoil myself too far. But like, obviously saw to some degree, I guess some of the minor points first before I hit like the big one that's probably on other people's minds too. There's some customer character customization, going to the extent of like, if you go and do a not a performance, if you go and fight in a gym, like maybe you're gonna be in like more competitive wear, because why wouldn't you fucking have uniforms if you were a part of an official competition, which goes into my second thing, which it feels like the game's actually trying to build more. And this is without playing the last few Pokemon installments. So maybe that's something that's already inherently a thing. But I think I would like to hope that the Pokemon team is actually trying to think about how the world actually works and what life is like in the Pokemon universe. As we can see from Detective Pikachu, the great movie coming out in May.
I don't know when it's coming out, but I'm excited.
Dude, I'm super excited for that too. Like,
apparently one of the new starter Pokemon is in the movie.
Hype. Oh, you know what? Another small negative point. If that bunny becomes a fighting type, I'm going to be so fucking pissed.
It is. Oh my God. It's already got a band-aid. It's already like,
it is already Naruto.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's more of a boxing movie, isn't it? He's going to be a boxer. Oh, he's going to turn into a boxer.
It's a rabbit. Rabbit have stronger feet than they do arms. So I mean, yeah, like, not only am I upset about him being a fighting type, I'm upset that you're choosing like the component of the rabbit, which is not even that good to begin with. If you're going to turn it into a fighting type, make it a kickboxer, please.
It's going to be a kickboxer. It's the same thing they did with Torchic, Combusken, Blaziken.
Which is garbage, speaking of which. I mean, not saying those Pokemon are garbage. I'm just saying,
why is that the trend?
Fucking give
why
me
is
a
the trend to make...
Give me a psychic fire or something. I don't know.
They did that.
We had a psychic fire. It was that fox thing.
As a starter?
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, that fox thing.
Give me
That was a generation. I can't remember if I even played that. Maybe. I got Greninja for whatever.
Okay, so give me a fire ghost. It's going to be a sad story, but sure.
That would be cool.
That would be cool, but then you couldn't have a... But like fire, that's like blazing enthusiasm. And what do you think about blazing enthusiasm? Obviously, he's not going to be a fucking cook. God, he should be a cook. Oh my God, make him a chef. Oh, yes, this is the fire type I want.
Final form is named Cookie.
Pretty much.
It's the Pokemon Cookie that bakes cookies.
Okay.
Oh my.
Can we just address the...
That sounds like an official Pokedex entry.
Yeah. Can we just address the ugly-ass monkey in the room? Is anybody going to pick up Grookey? Oh, okay.
I was gonna main Grookey.
I kind of felt like the starters this year didn't necessarily resonate with me to any degree. Like, I say this and then I realize I don't think I've liked the starters in many of the generations at this point.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, after you?
I would say I really like the design of the rabbit and the salamander.
I don't like the salamander. I don't like Grookey. Grookey is my least favorite.
Well, I found my rival, Neil. How about you?
I don't know.
Good thing I went with grass type, so now I've got the elemental advantage.
Boom.
Bitch.
I'm going to make a team that it's just utterly a trap for Cookie. It's going to be
the one
water type starter, and then I'm going to have like a rock and ground and a... Oh, wait, no, he's grass type. My bad. I do not want a rock and ground. I am just kidding. I'll take a fire. I'll take a flying. I'll take potentially a psychic if you get poison in there. Like, because Grookey could throw poop and then they could make those poison moves.
Oh, my God. In chat, you posted a picture of the powder puff, the power puff girls. Excuse me. I just made like a 40-year-old man mistake. the Powerpuff Girls, along with the starters from this generation, from Sword and Shield. And yes, like conspiracy theories or not, this is kind of convincing me that they took the design off the Powerpuff Girls.
And I think I just Google imaged Pokemon Sword and Shield, and it was like one of the things that came up.
Huh.
So yeah, apparently the Powerpuff Girls are the starter Pokemon. They point to prominent features on each of the Powerpuff Girls, i.e. Blossom and her ribbons being in the same orientation as, I almost called him Binary, Scorbunny. They've got Bubbles and how her part is down the middle with Froakie, and then how Buttercup's little pigtail things, the way her thing, way her,
it's like her bowl cut or her curl, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, the curl of her bowl cut is in the same position as Grokey.
I mean, this just, this comparison artwork just further cements my attitude that the bunny's the best out of all three.
The bunny is the best out of all three, but I'm a bigger Buttercup than a Bubbles, always.
Is it the voice? Is that what bothers you about Bubbles?
No, no. Bubbles is the most evil out of the three. Like, if you were being verbally attacked by any of the three Powerpuff Girls, who would be the one that you would not want to go against? Sure, Blossom would be like, she'd like use big words and like confuse you, hurt your feelings. Buttercup would, she'd just like be straight on, like, hey, you're fat and you're fucking ugly. But Bubbles would say some shit that would really fuck you up.
I think Bubbles,
you know it.
Bubbles would probably be really passive aggressive. She wouldn't insult you, but she would let her opinions be known. Whereas Buttercup would probably tell you what's wrong with you and then encourage you to make it better.
No, Blossom would be the one to make you encourage you to make it better and tell you what's wrong.
Really?
Buttercup would just call you fat and ugly. Bubbles would be like, she'd say some sadistic shit and be like, and that's why your parents are divorced, and walk the fuck away. And
wow. Wrecked.
Hey man, it's the sweet ones that you really gotta worry about. Bubbles would be the one you tell all your secrets to, and then she'd fucking backstab you. I don't trust her.
And that's Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Sorry.
No, the game from a graphical standpoint looks amazing, and referring back to Sword and Shield here. And that's maybe like, I know it's kind of, it goes against everything I've said about video game design and what I find important, but it will be nice to see a Pokemon game on a console of some amount of horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah. This will be great. This will be a fun game. I'm super excited. I just posted another picture in our chat of Grokey holding a sword. I already forgot what the...
Grokey...
Supple.
Yeah.
The lizard holding a shield, and then the Scorbunny holding a gun.
Well, seems like you guys have run out of steam, so I think it's a perfect time to wrap up and mark the whole episode for editing.
Yep.
Yeehaw. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions, you can write in to podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't forget to tell friends to leave reviews on our Apple Podcast. The more reviews we get, the better we'll be able to advertise, and then I'll be able to, if you would like, read off your names.
And while you're telling your friends about what Pokemon you're going to choose for the newest iteration of the series, go ahead and tell them about Fancy Ramen as well. And which one of your three hosts is your favorite?
I'm Cookie.
I'm Scott.
I'm Neil. And that was episode 109 of Fancy Ramen.
Hey, have a good week, everyone.